inspire, educate, connect. This is Yoga Digest, a vibrant community of passionate changemakers.
I'm Jen Bodner, and you're listening to Yoga Digest Now. We feature real people and real stories. Yoga Digest is your resource for inspiration, health, and well-being. Wake up to the now with tips from the experts on being the best you, achieving your goals, and finding balance for your mind, body, and soul. The time for living life fully is now. Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to the Yoga Digest Now podcast. This is episode 19, and I am super excited and kind of nervous about our guest today. Unless you've been under a rock for, gosh, I guess about the last 15 years and never heard of the TV show The Biggest Loser, The Doctors, we are blessed to be with Jillian Michaels today, who's also a best-selling author with, what is it, 8 titles under your belt, Jillian?
I think something like that.
But fitness guru, she has a brand new app we're going to talk about. Welcome, 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 Jillian, to the Yoga Digest Now podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It is such a pleasure. And I have to share with you, I've done a few podcasts here and there, and you're a mom, yeah?
Yeah.
So, but your kids are a little younger than mine. You know, as they get older, it becomes increasingly more difficult to impress them. But when I did tell my middle son, who's a senior, he's a freshman in college, so he's 18 years old, that I was interviewing you today, he was really, really impressed. So thank you for that, for making me look like a cool mom, because it doesn't happen very often anymore.
That's so cute. I love that. Please tell him my son hello.
Oh my gosh, I will. He'll be so tickled. We watched, he's a big reality TV show fan, and we watched The Biggest Loser for years. And he was just so really caught up with your personality on that show. Now, how old are your kids?
They're 8 and 10.
Oh, fun times. Yes, and you've got a daughter and a son, correct?
I got one of each.
And are y'all just having a ball with this? Are y'all doing homeschool there in California?
Oh, my gosh. So what's going on here is that public schools were supposed to start, and then that got pushed back, and a lot of private schools aren't starting until the second or third week of September. And there are some ways around the Zoom homeschooling situation. So some schools are getting permits to be in academic camp. Some schools are getting permits to be homeschools. Some parents are starting pods. I mean, it's just a bit total. And in my opinion, it's just chaos.
It's just 2020. We'll chalk it off of.
Yeah,
that was back in 2020. Everybody will know what you're talking about, when you reference. Yeah, remember? Yeah, it was 2020. Oh, yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, it's been a kind of crazy everywhere, but sending you good vibes for all that, and I'm glad that you were able to find some time to visit with us today, because I want to share some things with our listeners that they might not know. And it's kind of how you got into your journey here. I understand that you were doing personal training and when you were studying in college out there in California. Is that right?
Well, I fell into it, actually. I graduated high school early, and not because I'm a genius. I'm far from it. it's just because my birthday fell on a certain date, so I was always the youngest. So I graduated at 17, and I was training for my black belt at that time, and people in the gym would see me working out, and they assumed I was a trainer. So they would come up to me and you know, inquire like, okay, how much do you charge to train people? And I was thinking to myself, like, I bet this pays more than I'm making now. And at the time I was like delivering pizza and barbecue.
There were
like,
oh, wow.
And you know, these two restaurants that I worked for at a little like a strip mall for $5 an hour. So I started doing that for $15 an hour. And my mom, thank God, the voice of reason, was like, I think you need some sort of credential. Like, I don't know, a badge, a stamp. I don't think you can just do this. And so she got me my first little training certification when I was 17 and a half. Uh-huh. And it kind of went from there.
That is perfection. And so you said you kind of stumbled into it. What were you studying in college? Anything related to health and fitness?
God, no. I was always a terrible student. And I was just doing general education. I was just literally 18 and ended up dropping out after 2 years because I had ADD, but like it wasn't a thing. I never really understood. Like I had a retention issue when, like many people who are ADD, when you're not passionate about the subject, your brain chemistry is very different. So we can either telescope in on something, like really hyper focus on something when we're passionate, but when we're not, we just don't retain the information. And I kind of just all through high school and the beginning of college, I was like, ugh, I hate this. I just was never a student. I hated the general education stuff when I wasn't passionate about it. And I also, you know, I was gay, but like didn't really know that at the time. So I never really relate to the culture either. And I think those two things made school really hard for me. And I ended up dropping out at like 19 and a half and just like became great at training people. It came really naturally to me. And, you know, I think when you do what you love, if you're passionate about it and you do the work, the sky can really be the limit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's so interesting that you mentioned about sort of undiagnosed ADD, because yeah, back when we were young, there weren't labels for absolutely every type of personality, you know, like we have today. And I find it interesting because you know, you flock towards movement, right, and fitness, which I think happened to a lot of us. I feel the same way that I had some form of ADHD when I was younger as well that was undiagnosed, but I was moved to dance and gymnastics and things to kind of let that energy off. And so, yeah, you know, two things that people didn't talk a whole lot about back then was being gay and also just any sort of learning difference of any sort. It just wasn't acknowledged. So I appreciate you sharing that. And I want to know kind of where that breaking point happened, though, where you started doing this, you know, part-time because people were approaching you, and when you kind of flipped the switch and were like, okay, I'm going to take this to the next level and be, you know, one of the most influential fitness trainers in the world. Do you kind of, can you walk us through that?
Sure. Well, I took it for granted for many years. I just did what I loved and people referred me clients and it was just never an issue. And then when I was 24, I started dating somebody who worked in the television industry. I happen to have grown up in Los Angeles, so it's, you know, it is the primary industry out here. And I was kind of shamed and guilted about needing to get a real job. And make a very long story short, I ended up in the training program at a talent agency out here called International Creative Management, worked my way through this talent agency starting at 24. And by 27, I had become a junior agent and I hated it. And I'd never made less money in my entire life. And I had this scumbag boss that would have been the Me Too epitome. Like just a weasel, and I hated him. And he basically had embezzled a packaging fee on a movie from the agency, and I knew it because I'd been his assistant. So to make a very long story short, I outed this guy because I hated him so much. So stupid of me. And I ended up being fired and blackballed to never work in the entertainment industry again as an executive. So now I'm 20, just about 28. And I've wasted 3 years of my life. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, like, what am I going to do? I was scraping up change out of the couch to buy gas money. Like, absolutely at a loss, a complete dead end, rock bottom. And I was like, okay, well, I have to pay my bills. So I got a job at a physical therapy place, mm-hmm. and I was working under the supervision of a physical therapist to rehabilitate patients. So it started out like, you know, the cold packs, the hot packs, putting on the muscle stim, and then it became, okay, you know, you want to take these clients through these stretches, these exercises, and here's your chart. Until I ended up all of a sudden waking up again at 28 and loving going to work. And I was like, how did I get so far away from what I was always great at and what I always loved? Like, when I find that the more security you seek in life, the less you have. And the more you follow your passion, you know, the more, call it, I don't know, fate, serendipity, whatever you want to sort of identify it as, but the universe sort of conspires on your behalf when you're in that flow, as a friend of mine likes to say, Dashama, who's a fabulous yogi. And I was very much in the flow when I was training people and working with them to make them healthier and feel better. So at that point, I thought, all right, I'm 28. I'm good at this. I love doing this. What does the future look like career-wise? Mm-hmm. So I ended up opening a sports medicine facility of my own when I was 30. And ironically, a lot of the people that I worked with at that talent agency ended up coming to me as a trainer. Mm. So, because I was always giving people training advice when I was working at the talent agency.
Connections.
So one of them happened to be an agent, and he heard about Biggest Loser. Mm-hmm. And put me up for the job when I was 30 years old, and the rest is history.
There you go. Wow. Everything works out the way it's supposed to be. I love that you spoke about in the flow, and that goes for anything that anybody really truly just enjoys doing. I refer to that a lot. Just like with my kids when they're playing their sports, or, you know, they're following their passion, because it can really be just like banging your head against the wall if you're not in flow. And I just don't think it's supposed to be that hard all the time. Sure, there's challenges. Speaking of, you know, so you're clearly extremely motivated and very fit. And I wanted to see if you could offer up to some of our listeners who might have challenges. I'm sure you deal with this all the time working with clients. And when it is one of those days where you just don't want to get the job done, what is it that you go to keep you going, to get you up, get your workout in, and to make health a priority?
Well, intrinsically, I have already established a why, right? And you know, I'm sure you've heard this a million times. When you have that why to live for, it allows you to tolerate the how. And the how is the work and the sacrifice associated with the achievement of that goal, be it a successful career, a healthy relationship, or a healthy body. Anything worth having requires work and sacrifice. And I find that work with purpose becomes passion, right? But work without a purpose just feels punishing, and life can be punishing enough. Mm-hmm. So it's imperative that you identify all of the reasons why you want to be motivated, or how is your life going to improve when your health is improved, or if you go to the gym, or if you ask out that guy or girl, like, what is the end result? And it doesn't matter what your reasoning is. It could be as superficial as, I've always wanted to wear this brand of skinny jeans. Mm-hmm. It could be as profound as
guilty.
I me too, right? Same. And it could be, I lost my mother to breast cancer, and now I am going to live my life, my best life in her honor. And I'm going to run a 10K for, you know, Susan G. Komen and raise money for breast cancer research. Like it doesn't matter. You can have 100 answers to that. You can have two, you can have one, as long as you care about it deeply. And that's what people need to think about, is what does health look like in your life, or love, or money? It's not just, I want money. Do you want to have a small family-owned business, or do you want to be a Fortune 500 CEO? What is it that you are passionate about? Create it in your mind in detail and form an emotional connection to it. And then the next time it's like, ugh, I really don't want to do this today. Well, fair. But how do you want to look on that beach vacation? Do you want to be wearing the bikini, or do you want to feel uncomfortable in your own skin? And again, that's superficial, but maybe it matters to you. It doesn't matter. Do you want to be a role model for your kids? Do you want to live to meet your great-grandchildren? Like, what is important to you? Identify that and remind yourself what you're fighting for.
I like that. And so for you, I mean, I heard some things in there that kind of sounded like they might be familiar. What is it that you go to, or what is it when you wake up in the morning? I guess what I'm asking you is what are some of your whys, aside from, you know, wanting to be able to get in those skinny jeans?
Well, I mean,
like many of us.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing.
But I mean, I do have two kids, and I want to be a role model for my kids. And I want my kids to always think back and be like, my mom was a badass. You know, my mom was on the, you know, snowboarding with me on the Black Diamond slopes. My mom took me on all these fun, crazy adventures that required some athleticism. You know what I mean? Like, I want to role model that for them. And I want them to remember me that way years after I'm gone. I want to, you know, for it is my job. So to a certain extent, my livelihood depends on me not just talking the talk, but walking that walk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my own personal confidence and self-esteem is reliant upon how strong I am and how healthy I am. And now that I'm 46, I feel like I get a different, people look at me differently now. It's fascinating. They'll look at me and it's like, oh my God, she's 46. And you can redefine aging for an entire generation. You know, I mean, there's just nothing that I can't do at 46 that I did at 36 and even 26.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's so many different things that I care about now on so many different levels. And I want to meet my great grandchildren. You know what I mean? Like, I want to fend off disease as long as possible and prove that it's possible. Like, all those things matter to me.
Yeah, and there's such an opportunity right now for that with, you know, our mental health, which we'll get into. But a quick question about your kids. Do your kids like to exercise, and do they exercise with you? It's Lucencia and Phoenix, right? Phoenix.
Yeah, no, they don't like exercise. They're active in their own way. Like, they love karate, or they like gymnastics. Or they like dance. Like, they're activities that they like. And I think that's important because it builds their self-worth and their self-esteem. Like, if I tell my daughter we're going hiking, oh my God, she just just no interest. But if you tell her that you're going to take her to her karate class, over the moon. Or
yeah,
she's practicing her forms in my living room for 35 minutes, showing me, you know, how she's improving. So I think the thing with kids, at least in my opinion, is finding something they like, that they're passionate about, that keeps them active. You know, kids should be playing. Like, there is a social network for children. It's called outside. Like, you know what?
Yeah.
Kids should be, like, go swim in the pool if you have one. Like, go to the beach and go boogie boarding. Like, keep them physical and active and having fun and playing. That's what works with my kids.
Yeah, and they probably just like, you know, that social aspect of it when they're in things that are play, you know, what is it, healthy competition, you know, like martial arts and gymnastics and things like that, because they need that so much. Well, I was just curious because, yeah, same over here. Well, my kids, two of them really work out now, but they say that's all I ever talk about. And they kind of roll their eyes sometimes when I'm like, you know, talking about working out. They're like, yeah, there's mom again. So I like to hear that feedback. But I think at the end of the day, it's making an impact. And they clearly know, right? Like you said, this is your life's work. Like you have to walk the walk. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to. I wanted to ask you about some of the myths about fitness and maybe what some of the biggest myths out there are right now, or ones that come up for you and your clientele most often.
Sure. I mean, I see a lot of different questions about things that run the gamut, you know, between fitness and nutrition. I think nutrition is just, oh my gosh, the amount of misinformation is staggering. Because it's just an easy sell. You know, you reinvent the wheel and you sell a new magic bullet to weight loss or, you know, the perfect body. Like that stuff makes me nuts. So it could be anything along the lines of the newest fad diet. Like, I mean, I've heard them all lately. Like the F factor or this or that. It's just all nonsense. But I mean, with fitness, I think I'm seeing a lot of fasted cardio nowadays. And the problem with these trends and fads is that somebody will find one piece of information, right? And then they'll hang an entire diet or an entire workout on that. And the best way I can describe it is, imagine you had a giant painting on a wall and it's 4 feet by 4 feet, right? And it's a picture of a sailboat on the ocean. And on the sailboat, you've got people and they look like they're having a picnic and the best day ever out on the water. But in the background at the top of the painting, you see a massive storm on the horizon. So you're like, oh shit, these guys are in for some real trouble. Now it changes the picture. Diet and fitness will take one piece. So they'll just cut out the square, the happy little sailboat, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, look at how great, you know, what a beautiful day at sea. But they're not showing you the entire picture. So for example, with something like fasted cardio, they'll turn around and go, well, this study says that you burn a higher percentage of fat calories when you do fasted cardio. But what they're not explaining to you is that, first of all, that's irrelevant, because calories that are glucose and glycogen that don't get burned for fuel will end up being converted into fat anyway, that every single study will show you it's the law of thermodynamics, that it's calories in, calories out that matter, period. But even if that was irrelevant, even if I was wrong, when you take something like fasted cardio, when you're working out on an empty stomach and you're doing cardio, which is a lower intensity form of training, right? So The more intense the training, the more you're going to require glucose, which is available blood sugar, or glycogen, right? Which is fuels that fuel you've stored in your muscles and your liver. So the more low intensity the workout, the more, hence the concept of target fat burning zone, right? The more fat percentage of your calories, the higher your fat percentage of calories you're going to use would be. So to make a very long story short, when you train harder with food, you're burning more overall calories, and you end up burning the same amount of fat calories, if not more. You burn more calories after the workout's over because you've trained harder. You progress your fitness at a faster pace because you used more advanced fitness techniques. And it's all irrelevant anyway, because the glycogen and the glucose that you end up eating, that it doesn't matter. It's calories in, calories out, period. Health is a different conversation. But weight management, weight loss, weight gain is an energy equation. Mm-hmm. And while the quality of your calories has an impact on your basal metabolic rate over time because of how they impact your hormone balance, really, it's things like that, like fasted cardio being more efficient. It's not at all more efficient or more effective, not at all. Or you hear things like hot workouts, like I'm going to take yoga and I'm going to make it hot yoga. And then I'm like, okay, great. Tell me why. Well, I'm sweating like crazy. Like, okay. And? Well, I'm burning more calories. No, you're not. You're just cooling yourself. That's all you're doing. You've made it really hot. So now you're sweating more because your body's so hot, and you're dehydrating yourself, which is counterintuitive to an optimized metabolism and an efficient workout. And then it's like, well, I'm detoxing. Also, not true. Any fitness professional or any human being for that matter who tells you you detox through sweat is like literally telling you that you can turn lead into gold. It's absurd. You detox through kidney, liver, lungs, spleen. Like, no, you do not detox the body through sweat. It's not a thing. It's not real. It's not possible. So people think, well, I'm sweating more. Well, my heart rate's elevated. But your heart rate is elevated because you're having to drive blood to the surface of the skin because you need to cool down. Like it's not elevated through physical exertion. And in fact, if you were working out in a more temperate climate, again, you'd work out with greater intensity, which would burn more calories overall during the workout and long after the workout's over. So there's just so many misconceptions like this that make me absolutely nuts. I mean, I could go on and on. And
I'm sure you have a lot of stories.
I literally could go on.
I'm going to go ahead and put it out there that I absolutely do love hot yoga, whether it's detoxing or not. There's something about it that just makes me feel awesome.
If you like it, then that's one thing. But if you were to think that it's detoxing you, it's just not. Or
that it's necessary to get the benefits,
the burn,
I guess. Yeah.
Not. I mean, it's just not. Like, I think people like the challenge, and that's, if you love it, that's a different conversation.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about
efficiency,
it's just not the case. I mean, it's just, that's the only thing.
So I went for a run yesterday. I'm in Texas, and it's like basically hell here right now.
Yeah.
And it was humid, and I had one of the slowest. I mean, and I run the same distance all the time, like for, you know, almost 30 years now. And it's just 3 miles. And I could barely get through it yesterday. It was so hot. So when you talk about just that, like not able to breathe and something was happening in my body. So it totally makes sense. But yeah, I can only imagine some of the feedback you get. Now with that, I want to transfer right into the next question. And that is, what is your favorite workout? I shared with you that I love hot yoga. What's your favorite go-to workout? Like your number one, just this is what I love to do.
I've recently gotten into jump roping only because I was so bad at it. My entire life, I hated it. I was terrible at it. I would like literally get winded in a matter of minutes. And then because of all the kind of quarantine, safer at home, gyms closed, that was at least going on in California. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, what am I going to do? And I live, fortunately and unfortunately, I live on the literally the most dangerous highway in the world. So it's not really conducive to a bike ride or a run, even though I do occasionally ride my bike on it. I mean, it's extremely, extremely dangerous. So you don't really, you know, you can go hiking and that's great. But it's like, I kept thinking like, all right, what am I going to do? Like I paddleboarded a few times. That's great. But it wasn't a hard enough workout.
Very low impact. Yeah.
Yeah. It just wasn't cutting it. So I was like, all right, maybe I should try jump roping and let me see how that goes. And I ended up like watching all these YouTube tutorials, like these guys jump rope dudes. And I ended up loving it and practicing like all these different types of skips. And when you start to improve at something, which I, of course, know this, but it hasn't applied to me in such a long time, when you think you're really bad at something and then you end up actually becoming decent at it, it redefines your self-confidence, your belief in other things that you might have thought were out of your reach. So I've been loving jump roping recently.
That's awesome. That's great. And it's super challenging. You know, I attend this group workout sometimes and they're always encouraging us like, try the double under, and you're
still
like,
can't get that,
is,
by the way.
So hard.
I still cannot get it. And I know exactly how to do it and I still can't get it.
It's so hard.
It's bizarre. I'm like, Jill, for God's sake, I've watched a million videos. I've had friends give me, and it's like, there is something about the fact that I cannot seem to double the speed on my wrists. I'm like, I don't know why. The day that I get that is going to be like, I'm opening the best bottle of champagne I could find.
It's like a coordination thing. Okay, quick question, just kind of off the cuff here. Do you have, I'm assuming you eat a very healthy diet, but do you have a favorite like cheat meal? Like what is it that like, if you're going to be bad, like what's your go-to? Or does that even ever happen?
You know, I am a believer in balance. So I would typically in a day say 80% of my calories are really healthy choices and 20% are not really healthy choices. Now, I was a kid that was an overweight kid, and I very much understand the concept of using food as a coping mechanism, as a defense mechanism, as a means for control and comfort. So there are certain foods that I personally have just said, all right, you know what? I don't want to eat this stuff. So like I don't eat sweets. And I used to all the time. And it's not because I don't think there's room for it in a healthy diet. It's because I didn't like the fact that I felt it had more power over me than I had over it. So I, like 3 years ago, might be longer now, I decided like for New Year's, I was going to give up like sugar as in refined sugar, like a cookie, an ice cream, a candy bar. Mm-hmm. And I got kind of a month into it and thought, you know what? Like, I like that I feel more in control over this. And I sort of never looked back. But I do eat crap. And that could be a piece of pizza. It could be sweet potato fries. It could be, you know, organic Cheetos. There's this brand called Luke's Organics that I could have with like a sandwich or an organic hot dog. Like I will eat crap 20% of the time every single day. And I just work it into my calorie allowance. And I try to go organic with that crap. So that it's like, all right, this is complete crap. It has no nutritional value whatsoever. But at least I'm not adding fake color, fake flavor, fake fats, pesticides, herbicides into the mix. And I find that balance works well for me.
Awesome. That's great advice. Yeah, organic all the way. So kind of switching gears again, when did yoga come into play? Because I don't really recall seeing that a whole lot. And I'm just curious what your yoga evolution has been like.
Sure. I mean, look, I've always loved taking other people's yoga classes, whether, you know, it was like Jesse Shane at Yoga Works or, you know, Brian Kest, or like, we're very lucky to have great people available because I live in a big city, but I'm sure there are fantastic teachers all over. And so I personally love to work out with other trainers just because I like their perspective. I like to be pushed by them. I want to hear their point of view. I want to learn from them. I think the best teacher is the best student. So I've always taken different classes and tried new things. And then I take what I like and I integrate it and I leave what I don't. So I've always loved yoga. I am not a yogi. And I mean, like my frame of mind, my flexibility, I will never be an expert. And I think of it like this. When you have, like, you might have a medical degree, right? You're a doctor. There are many trainers. They might have training certifications. My subspecialty is weight loss. I'm the queen of it. I am arguably the best in the world at it. There's no person I cannot get weight off of. You may have emotional issues and deeper psychological issues with food that will make you put the weight back on or struggle with it long term, which is totally understandable, but I'm great at that. That's what I'm good at. You want to lose 5 pounds? I know how to do it. You want to lose 150 pounds? I know how to do it. But if you came to me and said, I'm training to be Thor in this movie, I would be like, hold on, let me call Kelly Starrett. Like, just as though if I was a heart surgeon and you came to me and said, I need to see a neurosurgeon, I would refer you. So for me, I did create 2 yoga programs on my DVDs or with my DVDs, but with yogis. Mm-hmm. So I've always had people who were great at what they do help me create whatever it is that's out of my wheelhouse. And of course I had to like Jillianize it a little bit. So it's still not traditional yoga. There are HIIT intervals in there. We built weights into Yoga Inferno. But I had, you know, Linda Shelton work with me to co-create both of those programs, as well as Kenta Seki, who's also a fantastic little yogi. With that said, my goal with the app, and one of the things that we're doing the month of September, is to bring other people onto platforms that I've created so I can introduce somebody who might have trained with me for a while to new, fresh faces and talent. So Dashima, for example, is a yogi who I personally love and have done her workouts. And now she's coming on my app for the month of September to take people through this 30-day yoga challenge. So,
National Yoga Month.
That's right. Exactly. So like, this is where I would say, like, I'm the student of great yogis. I personally am not even close
to
a great yogi. So for me as a fitness person, my goal is always to introduce people to be like, I love this yogi. Dashima is amazing, or Dylan Werner is amazing, or Judge Brian Kest is amazing, or whoever you love. Like, teach me about the yogi you love. That's amazing. But I am no great yogi. I just love what yoga has done for me.
So what are some of the benefits that you have seen through your yoga practice, besides the obvious of flexibility and mobility? Anything else?
For me personally, there's just something about that workout that is very much like the jump rope, in that I am so not good at it that when you all of a sudden nail that one pose, mm-hmm. it's like life changing. You know what I mean? It's like getting that double under. You know, you get the, who knows, you get the jumping from down dog into crow, and your head just explodes. You know what I mean? It's that moment that yoga has, and other forms of fitness have it, of course. You know, you get somebody to run their first mile or do their first push-up, and it's life-changing stuff. For me, yoga is so quantifiable in that way, because it's like, wow, I couldn't even balance this way, and now I'm doing, you know, crow and a handstand and this and that. And there's just such an overwhelming sense of accomplishment you get from yoga. Oh, I can only speak for myself, because I realize it's like, it's not supposed to be about that, but for me, I love being able to see and measure the progress. And I think also it is the only workout where I think I have ever felt the endorphins in my entire life, where I have left that workout and been in a better mood. Whereas, like, I'm glad when my workouts are over, I'm like, oh, thank God that's over. But I'm not like, oh, I'm so high on life. Not ever. Except with yoga. Like, I've actually walked out of yoga class and just felt peaceful.
Yeah. Well, we call it a work in instead of a workout.
I love it.
There is something that happens when you allow, and you said it earlier on, right at the beginning of the interview, and you hit the nail on the head, and it's in that flow. And that's exactly what happens in yoga. It just becomes a flow state. And even if you're struggling, you know, your teacher's there, provided you're practicing with somebody, and you have named some amazing teachers that are reminding you to keep coming back to your breath. You know, we try to make it, at least most of the studios I'm affiliated with and teachers that I know, not a competition where you're just kind of taking it one breath at a time. And that can be very encouraging, especially for people who struggle with traditional quote unquote workouts. Yoga can be a great way for them to at least become more comfortable with the discomfort. Right. Now, are you doing, and in your challenge, did I see any meditation in there? I think I saw some yoga for sleep, which is amazing.
Dashima is actually great at taking people through meditation. So
awesome.
She has literally built in a different practice every day for 30 days. And some is restorative, and some focuses on hip flexibility, and some focuses on whether or not you want a flat tummy and how to strengthen your core. And then some helps you relax and calm down. And she's built in some meditations. So, I mean, she really is, lives it, breathes it. She is a top-notch yogi. And so she's the perfect way for me to introduce, I'll say, an audience that's used to training with me to a completely fresh modality in the best possible way, if that makes sense, with a great teacher who's extremely responsible and who knows how to do it without overwhelming people and intimidating them and mm-hmm. showing them all the benefits.
Yeah, no, I love that you're bringing this in, and I love to see the evolution that yoga is just having, not only, you know, in gyms and in the fitness industry, but also seeing, you know, large companies participating in the benefits of meditation for stressed out employees, for, you know, overworked CEOs and things like that. I wanted to ask you about your charity work. I see you are involved in a lot of different charities, and I just wanted to know what inspires that in you.
Sure. Well, my approach is a little bit different now than it was in the past. In the past, you know, people would say, oh, you need like a profile, an identity in the space. And I was like, that's ridiculous. I just do, like, if somebody needs something, you do it. You know, oh, we're trying to get like a bunch of clothes for Dress for Success, and can you help us with the drive online and donate clothes? And I'd be like, sure, why not? You know, so I would kind of run the gamut across whether it was raising money for cancer or fighting childhood obesity or animal welfare. Cause I just thought, like, if somebody needs something, why not do it? Like, wouldn't you do that sort of typically throughout your everyday life? And then I got a little older, and obviously I adopted a little girl from Haiti.
Yes.
And subsequently I am also of Syrian descent. Not that it's so far removed at this point. My paternal grandparents came over, you know, through Ellis Island, I don't know how many years ago at this point, like 80 years ago. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I am still half Syrian, and which is, and my mother happens to be half Eastern European Jew. So I'm a very unique combination. I was at an exhibit at the Annenberg for an old client of mine who was a producer at CBS News and then ended up producing a documentary about refugees. So I went to the Annenberg to see her. And this is, you know, years after I was no longer a trainer and just a friend. And I remember, you know, the images of children washing up on the beach in Europe and thinking to myself, how is this happening? And I ended up getting involved with the UNHCR, which is the United Nations Refugee Agency.
Ah, okay.
And at that point, you end up sort of, there are a lot of requirements. I still can't even call myself an ambassador. That's how kind of they're pretty stringent about who they allow to work with them. And then at first it was like, okay, I post this on social media. And at that point I was like, look, I'm really not interested in like the social media activism. I don't believe in it. You know, and I if anything, I think it allows people to be like, oh, I posted my black square today. And it's like, no, dude, no. That at the end of the day, in my opinion, that's not how change gets done. And I think it allows people to sort of be like, all right, well, I did what I needed to do today. So I was like, that's not really what I want to do. I either want to take on a more active role, or, you know, then I might not be a person you guys want to work with. So they ended up sending me on a mission to the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or I financed it myself. Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting involved in fundraising for them. And to make a very long story short, you know, when you really want to drill down on a cause, you can't be asking people to get involved in a million different things or give to a million different things. And at that point, I'm now very focused on my work with the UNHCR and raising awareness, mm-hmm. About the global refugee crisis, raising money. And I still do work with PETA very closely, though. I've been working with that organization for over a decade now. I adore Ingrid Newkirk and Dan Matthews, and I'm a huge animal lover, mm-hmm. even though I am not vegan. And I don't think you have to be perfect to advocate for something that's important to you. So those are really the two areas of my focus these days.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing the detail around the UNHCR, because I did see that on the list, and I'll be honest, I was not familiar with what that was. So it's so great that you're able to find something close to your heart, and that, yeah, you're not just checking off of a list, like, this is trendy right now, so I'm going to go ahead and jump on this train because, you know, this is like what all the celebrities are interested in or are doing, but that you're following something close to your heart, because that is the only way we will be able to make real changes if we believe in it. We're passionate about it, just like you stated earlier in the interview about your life's work, you know, doing work that you feel passionate about, and you just get up and do it every day, you'll be interested in it. It's not hard for you. You don't have to make yourself do it. So thank you so much for that insight. Jillian, before we go, I just wanted to see if you could give us a little bit more information about what you're working on. Tell us, I know you said, mentioned your app a little bit earlier, and that, you know, you've got some yoga coming from your teacher for National Yoga Month. What? Tell us the name of your app, where we can find it, where we should go to keep up with all things Jillian Michaels.
Oh, sweet. You can just go to JillianMichaels.com, and it's a fitness app that essentially customizes workout programs and meal plans for the individual. So no matter what your goal, your preference, your fitness level, the equipment you do or don't have available, no matter how much time you want to dedicate to it, whether you show up and tell me, I want you to make a workout for me right now that's total body, 10 minutes, I'm a beginner, I have no equipment available, or you can take a program and say, I want to lose 50 pounds in 3 months, I'm an intermediate level athlete, I have dumbbells and a mat. It's literally wraps your fitness and your nutrition around you. All of the recipes and the meal plans are created by registered dietitians and chefs. And now we're just starting to bring new trainers onto the platform, which I'm super excited about. And Dashma is the first with her 30-day yoga challenge in September. And that's really where all my content lives at the moment, because apps can hold everything from recipes to every workout you could ever create of any kind. So when we add new stuff, we add it into that, and it can be utilized on your television, on your tablet, on your phone, on your watch. There's running programs, walking programs, anything you want, we can create in there. So for the Jillian Michaels brand, that's my primary focus all the time.
Well, that is amazing. Who would have ever thought back when you were getting started in this industry that you would have something people just walked around with and held in their hands and could have all of your information and encouragement right there at their fingertips? What a world we live in, huh?
It's crazy. I know. It's awesome, though. It's such an amazing tool. You're right. If you told me that 20 years ago, I would have been like, no. That doesn't even make sense.
Maybe on another planet, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Jillian, I want to just thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. It's been great keeping up with you and following you all these years. We appreciate the recipes that you've submitted to Yoga Digest in the past. And we're just so grateful to have this partnership with you. So wishing you continued success. And we look forward to seeing you around. And we'll look forward to the 30-day yoga challenge this month as well.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
You as well. Okay, take care. Bye.